Okay, we're starting on Daf
Samach.
Our Daf today is Samach Daled. We're going to start at Samach Gimel Amabet. At the two dots. V'amar Rav Nachman. Okay, six lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Nachman, Hai man da oziv pshite mechavre, ve'eshkach be tufina. Tufina, I don't know exactly how you pronounce that. It comes from tve, which is more. So he borrows money from a friend, coins. And it turns out he realizes after that let's say they agreed on 100, and there were 106 coins, 105 coins, or 110 coins, or we'll see why I'm specifically choosing those numbers. And he finds out there were more coins. So, ibichde shada toa mechayev laduele, vila matana ba'almahu diyayevle. If it was an amount that you could say that he could have easily made a mistake about it, then he has to return it. And if not, then we call it a matana ba'alma hu diyavle. The assumption is that the malve threw in some money as a gift to the love. Okay? And therefore, he doesn't have to return it. So obviously, the question is going to be, what is v'chdei shada to'em? What is it, right? I would think the pshat would be, when I first read it, before I continued on, it sounds like, if it's a little small amount, so he just threw in a little extra money. If it's a larger amount, that you wouldn't if it's a smaller amount, then you would definitely make a mistake about it, right? If it's a larger amount, then we would assume that you were actually giving a gift.
But that's so inconsistent, because up until now we were discussing small amounts, like even the most minute differences.
But that's rebeat. In other words, this isn't rebeat.
Oh, yeah.
Because the lova is getting more money, not the malva. Right. Rebeat is always the lova is giving the malva more money. So this isn't a rebeat issue. This just has to do with our general business relations or how you view this extra money. So now the Gemara is going to say, okay, against what I said, what does it mean that b'chdei shada to'a? Hechidami b'chdei shada to'a. What's going to be the case? Amar Rav Acha b'Rei Rav Yosef b'isuraita b'chumshaita. Okay, this means if it's a mistake within fives or tens, what's the assumption? Let's say we're talking about prutot. Let's take pennies, for example, okay? So if you have pennies and you count, well, I guess pennies wouldn't be like, let's do shekels. So you have single shekels. Let's say you lend 100 single shekels. So what are you going to do? When you count them, you're going to put them in piles of 5 or 10. It's just the way people count. It makes it easier. So if he's off by a 5 or a 10, by something divisible by 5 or 10, right, then, you know, let's say an extra 5 or an extra 10, then you can assume that when he counted his piles, he just miscounted. So therefore, if it was 105 or 110, we assume it was a mistake and you have to return it. If it was 106, for example, which is not it's an even number, but not even in terms of the way we assume people count. People don't count in sixes or in threes, right? It's not likely that he did it like that. Then we can assume that he added the extra money. Amalei Rav Acha, and then you can keep it. It's just a gift. Amalei Rav Acha, Berei de Rava, the Rav Ashi. Here's a good, smart, alecky question. Vi inish takifahu de lo yahiv matanamai. What if it's a guy who's just a not nice guy, and he's not the kind of guy that's going to be giving you matanot? So, can you still assume it was a matana if it was 106, let's say? Amalei. No, you can't assume it was a matana, but you can assume that it was something else. Amalei, dilma migzal gazle ve'evla leba cheshbon. Maybe he stole money from him, and what did he do then? He wants to return it, but he's embarrassed to return it. So he throws it into the loan and he says, oh, you know, here I'm lending you money. And he, without telling him, throws it in. Ditanya, how do we know that this works in terms of Vashivit HaGzela? HaGozelet Chaveiro V'Hibli Alo B'Cheshbon Yatza. When you return the money, we've talked about this. Do you need Da Balim or not? Remember we had the whole question? So here we see that if you steal from a friend, and let's say he's buying an item from you, and you give him change, and with that change, you give him the extra money that you stole from him, your yotze, even if he doesn't notice it. Okay? So therefore, we now have, on the one hand, right, if it's fives or tens, we assume the person made a mistake and you have to return it. If it's not fives or tens, you can assume that it was a matana, you don't have to return it. But if the guy was the kind of guy who's not giving gifts, then you can assume you still don't need to return it because it could be he stole something from you and he wants to be mavliya to absorb it into there without you noticing because he's embarrassed to return it. Ve'i inish da'ate me'alma, delo shakta v'tari bahade. Let's say he's a guy you never had anything to do with, in which case he hasn't stolen from you. But by the way, this assumes that who's stealing from you? A storekeeper, right? Someone who shortchanges you, right? He feels bad that he shortchanged you, so this time he gives you money back. But if it's some random guy that you've never met in your entire life, and therefore you have to assume that he hasn't stolen any money from you. So here's an interesting one. So what's going to be the case? Amarle, still you can't. Why? Dilma ini shachrine gazle va amarle ki yazi ploni pshita minech avlale b'cheshbon. The robber, someone else stole from him, but he's embarrassed to return it. But he sees that the guy he stole from is going to borrow money from someone. So he says to the guy, listen, do me a favor. When you lend this guy money, I'm going to give you some extra money to give in because I owe him this money that I stole from him. And therefore, put the money in. So therefore, we basically conclude that what it's really saying is this klal is going to be relevant no matter what. That even if you don't think that there's a likelihood that this person is giving you a gift, we can still assume there's some reason why he's trying to give you this money, and therefore keep it. You don't have to return it. Okay, it's an interesting,
bizarre.
Yeah, a little bizarre. Okay, I'm a Rav Kahana. Have a yativna b'shilhi pirkei d'Rav. I came late to the shir one day, and I got the tail end of the shir of Rav. Vishamit, and I heard d'ka'amar kari kari. I heard him talking about a gourd. I heard him say gourd, gourd. I heard all this discussion about a gourd. V'lo yadana mai ka'amar, and I had no idea what he was talking about. Batar d'kam Rav, when after Rav got up from giving the shir, Amri lehu, I said to the people there, my kari kari de ka'amar Rav. What was all that talk about a gourd? Amuli hachi ka'amar Rav. They said to me, this is what Rav was saying. Hai mandiyav zuze liginai akari v'ka'azle asara kare b'nei zarta. Someone who gives a gardener, here the sense, the assumption is a gardener is someone who plants stuff, not necessarily, you know, he plants his own field. Someone gives money to this person who planted gourds, and he gives him money for gourds. V'ka'azle, and what's the going rate for gourds? Asara kare b'nei zarta. Zarta comes from a zeret, a pinky. So obviously it means a small gourd. The rate was 10 gourds for zuz. V'amarle, yahivna, and the gardener, guy who planted it, said to the guy who went to buy, yahivna lach b'nei garmida, I will give you large gourds for the same price. Okay, so small gourds go for 10, right? The way we always buy fruits is vegetables is by weight. He's saying, I will give you big ones for the size of the small ones. Eat nehu shari, late nehu aser. If he has the gourds right now in his property, so now it's unclear how to read this. Does it mean he has to have big gourds? The general way of reading this means that he has to have a few big gourds already grown in his property, and it will be mutar. But if he doesn't have big gourds on hand at the time, then it's aser. Okay, then it's not going to work. Some people say, I think some people read it otherwise. Right. Rashi understands it, that if he has big ones in his property at the time, then it's mutar. If not, it's asur. I'm pretty sure that there's another one who actually says maybe as long as he has small ones, it's okay. What?
He said maybe not asur, maybe just irrelevant, because he might forget when he actually gets the gourds. And if he doesn't have them at the time, then why should it be asur?
Because if he doesn't have them, again, what's he promising? It's always the problem. He's promising something larger, right? In other words, he's promising him something bigger, which he's getting sachar because he's taking the money now. It's sachar hamtana ma'ot, basically. He's taking money now, and he's gaining, right? He's paying the gardener now, and the gardener gets to keep the money longer before he actually has to pay up the stuff. Mm-hmm. So then they say, pshita, obviously this is the case. So why are you even telling us this? Ma'u detema kevan demimela karavu shapir dami. So now what do we say? And therefore kamashmalam. What might you have thought? Since in any case, these gourds that are small, they're eventually going to get big. It's not like something's, you're talking about something different. So it might be enough, even if he just has small ones and he doesn't have the big ones on hand, it's enough because the small ones are basically as if he has big ones. Okay? So therefore, it comes to teach you that no, if he doesn't have big ones on hand, he's not allowed to do this. So now they say, Kiman, who does this go according to? Ki hai tana detanya haolech lachlov et izav, ligzoz et rechelav, lirdot et kvarato, mitzao chavero v'amarlo. Okay, so let's just start for a minute. The guy goes out to milk his goats, to cut off the, to shear the sheep, to take off the honey from the honeycomb. And his friend sees him, va'amarlo, and he says to his friend, ma she'izai chovot machor lecha. Masha rechelai gozezot machor lecha. Masha kvaradi rodeh machor lecha. Mutar. If he says to his friend, whatever I'm going right now to shear my sheep, I'll sell you for this price whatever shearings come off. I'll sell you for this price whatever honey I get from the beehive. I'll sell you, for this price, any milk I get from my goats. That's okay. Aval ima marlo, mash izai chovot, kach vekach, mechor lecha, mash rechelai gozizot, kach vekach, mechor lecha, mash kvaradi rodek, kach vekach, mechor lecha, asur. But if he says, if he doesn't know what's going to be, right, and he says, I'm going to give you this amount, okay, what's going to come out of my sheep, and what's going to come out of all these things, okay, the honey, the shearings or the milk, then it's going to be forbidden. Okay? 1 second. Right. Because in the first case, what's the difference between the two cases? In the first case, he's basically saying, I'll sell this to you for whatever price there is. So therefore, he's saying, I'll take whatever loss there is or whatever it's going to be, I'm giving you this price. But in the second one, what happens? He's taking money up front, right? And then he's promising him a particular amount, but that particular amount might go up over time, right? The price might change, in which case, again, he'll be getting sachar for hamtana ma'ot, right? This all goes back to how we started yesterday, for getting the money up front, right? Where it's not clear what the value is going to be down the road. So it's asur. Va'af agav dibimela karabu, and even though the goat's going to have milk, we know that the goat has milk, and we know that the sheep's have hair, and we know that there's honey in the beehive, and it's going to happen. Kevan delitnuhu b'sha'at b'hahishata asur, since it doesn't exist at the time. In other words, we don't know what it is at the time. It's inside the animal at the time, right? Or it's inside the beehive. So it's not in actuality yet. Okay? And that's compared to these gourds. It's not quantifiable. Okay? And that's the same thing as these gourds, where if you don't have, right, you have the small ones, but you don't have the large ones, then you can't commit it. Okay? Because again, the price fluctuation is going to cause a ribi problem. So now, what do they say? Ika de amre. Some people say, Amarava, Kevan dimimela karabu shapir dami. So Rava says, no, but the gourds are definitely going to grow large. So therefore, it's not a problem. In other words, if you have small ones in existence and you know they're going to grow large, so then having small ones is as if you have big ones, because they will eventually grow large. So then they question this, and they say, what do you mean? We just read this braita about the izim and the rechelim and the dvorim, and what did we say? V'hatanya, kach v'kach asur. If you specify a particular amount, which is what happened in our case, right? What did he say? I'll give you 10 large gourds for a zuz. He specified a price. So we said, and that was the same thing as the case of kach v'kach. And what did we say? Kach v'kach asur. Right? You're not allowed to, even though you could say they're also dimimela karabu, right? Clearly, the sheep is going to have, the goat's going to have the milk, and the sheep is going to have the shearings, and the beehive is going to have the dvash, the honey. So now what do they say? What's the difference? Hatam lav minei karabu. Deshakle lelahai va'ate achrina biduchte. Va'ate achrina, sorry. Biduchte hacha. Wait, how do
you
read this?
No,
va'ate achrina biduchte. Okay, so what are we saying here? When it comes to the honey and the shearings and all that, it's not, right, what's going to happen? He's going to, somebody, right now, the goat has milk inside. But if he doesn't go today and take that milk will come out today or whenever, right? Let's say the shearings, maybe it won't be today, but it'll be over time. And the ones he's promising to his friends down the road is not going to be the same ones that are in the animal right now, or not necessarily. So that's different than saying, Hacha minei karabu. But here, these same ones are going to grow large. If he takes these away and new ones come in there, said that's not what he's committing to. He's promising him these that are now small that will grow large. And therefore, Rava wants to distinguish between this case and that case, and wants to say that in this case, it shouldn't be a problem. He disagrees with the Tana, right, who says that we started off with the case, and then right, Rav Kahana said about what Rav was saying, and then they said, right, this is obvious, because Mimela Karavu, and then they say it's obvious, and then they say, no, you might have thought to Mimela Karavu Shapridami Kamashmalan. And then they say it's like the Tana, this Braita, who brought in this case about the Izim, and then Rav says, some people say that Rav said that this case is a different case. Amar Abaye, one second, Amar Abaye, Shara leil inish lemeimer leil chavre, helach arba'a zuze achavita dechamra, I takfa bereshutech, I yikira izila bereshuti. Abaye now comes a new case. He says, a person is allowed to say to his friend, sell, make him a sale and say, here's arba'a zuze for this chavit of wine. I'm giving you 4 zoos for this chavit of wine, but I'm not taking it right now, right? I'll take it later on. I takva, if it goes bad, then birishutcha. Then it's going to be your responsibility, the owner. In other words, you have to protect it from going sour, from turning into vinegar. That's your responsibility. So if it's going to be like a partial sale, right? Because normally, one takes responsibility entirely, right? We always have this issue of who's responsible. So if you're going to buy it and you're purchasing it, well, then it's yours. If you're not really purchasing it, then it belongs to the owner still until such time. This is going to be an in-between. So he says, if it spoils, it's your responsibility. Iyakara izila, but if it fluctuates in price, so I'm giving you money now for this amount. If it goes up in value or down in value, birshuti, then that's on me. In other words, I'm going to take this amount, whatever it's worth, whether it goes up, whether it goes down. Amalei Rav Shrevya Labai. So Abaye says this is allowed to do. Okay? You're allowed to basically take this wine, and even though the price will fluctuate later, you can say, you know, that works and it's not perceived as rebate. Amalei Rav Shrevya Labai. Hai karov l'sachar v'rachok lehefsedu. Isn't this where the buyer is really taking very little risk? Okay? Because it's karov l'sachar and rachok lehefsed. It's unlikely that the wine's going to spoil, okay? But it's more likely that it'll actually go up in value and he'll get more for what he paid, okay? In which case, it should be rebeat because that's the more likely outcome that's going to happen. And we say that anytime something's karov l'sachar v'rachok l'hefsed, then we're going to look toward the sachar part and not look at the hefsed part, okay? Not assume the hefsed's going to happen, and therefore, this looks like rebeat, okay? So Amar Le Abaye says no. Kevan de makabel ale zula karov lezeu lezeu. He says, I don't know why you think that it's karov lezachar v'rachok lehefsed. This guy, it's true, it might be unlikely that the wine's going to spoil, But when he said it'll happen in my Rishut, he said whether the price goes up or whether the price goes down. And there's an equal possibility that the price will go up or the price will go down. We have no idea right now what's going to happen with the price. And because of that, this isn't a case of karov l'sachar v'rachok l'hafseid. And that's why Abaye says you can do this. If he assumes responsibility, whether it goes up or down, since he's assuming both responsibility of up and down. Remember, all the cases we saw before was that he's saying, I'm locking into this price even if the prices go up. Now they're saying, if you basically say up or down, then according to Abaye, it's okay. Okay, the other guy didn't agree with him, but he says, you know, Abaye thinks it's okay. Okay, the next part that we're going to do today is all review from stuff we've done in the beginning of Bava Kama about Hadar b'chatzar chaveiro shelo midato. If you remember that whole sugya, if you live in someone's house and the guy doesn't know, right? And we had a case of Zenehenev, it was all Zenehenev, Zelo Chaser, right? If the house is uninhabited and the person lives there and, you know, and the guy doesn't know or he does know, all different cases we saw. So if you remember there, we also talked about it in this context. So now we'll see it again. It'll be good review. And we had a good, interesting story at the end that we'll see. We'll finish off today on the story. Ha'malveh et chaveiro, lo yador b'chatzero chinam, v'lo yiskor mimenu b'pachot mipnei shehu ribit. So we've been talking all along about cases where somebody, if the malveh gets benefit from the loveh, in addition to the fact that he's getting his loan back, he also gets some sort of other benefit, then what do we say? It looks like ribit. And even though the ribit, the tasra midoraita, is ribit ketsutza, which means that we got into a deal from the beginning. I said, I'm lending you money on the condition that you pay me back the money plus ribit. That's ribit. However, if while the loan is out still, and you give me some benefit, like for example, the case is here, okay, you let me live in your chatzer for free, or you rent me property for less than what you normally rent it for, then I, as the malveh, am getting a benefit, and that's perceived as ribita rabbanan. Okay, it's not ribita oraita, but it's ribita rabbanan. So Amar Rav Yosef Bar Menume, Amar Rav Nachman, Af al pi she'amru hadar b'chatzar chaveiro shelo midato eino tzarich la'alot lo sachar, even though they say, okay, this is an Amora coming now, right? Not connected to the Mishnah. He says, even though they say that if you live in your friend's property without him knowing, eino tzarich la'alot lo sachar, right, in a case of zenehene v'zelo chaser, okay, if you remember, we talked about all different possibilities and permutations. We'll review some of them today. But hilvehu v'dar b'chatzero tzarich la'alot lo sachar. This whole thing of you living in someone's property and zenehenev is zelo chaser, and therefore it's okay, doesn't work in the case where the relationship between the person who's living there to the person whose property it is a malveh loveh relationship. If they have a deal going on outside of this, if he loans him money, okay, hilvehu, and then the guy lives in his property after he took the loan, then sarif la lo sachar. Then he's got to pay. He can't get any benefit because this looks like ribit. So now the Gemara says, wait, Rav Yosef, why are you saying this in the name of Rav Nachman? My kamashman, Tanina, it says it explicitly in the Mishnah. What? B'chadesh lano ahalachav, it says in the Mishnah? Tanina, hamalvet chaveiro lo yidor b'chatzero chinam. So the Mishnah says it explicitly, the first line of the Mishnah. If you lend your friend money, you're not allowed to live in his chatzer for free. So what does he answer? Imi matnitin hava amina, I would have said, hane mile bechatzer dekaima laagra, vegavra de'avid lemegar. I would have thought that the Mishnah is talking about, and here I said there was all these different permutations that we saw there, that the Mishnah is talking about a chatzer that generally gets rented out. Okay, it's something that's on the market. V'gavra de'avid lemegar. And the person is a person who is looking to rent property. Aval. And that's a case where the malveh can't get any tovat hana'ah, basically, right, from the loveh. Aval chatzer de'lo kaima la'agra. V'gavra de'lo avid lemegar ema lo. But if it's a property that's not on the market, it's an abandoned house, and the person is not really looking to rent, but he just happens to find this house and says, oh, you know, nice place to stay, but he wasn't like he was looking around to rent something, then you might have thought Maybe in this case, even a Malvalova can do this. Because it's classic Zenehenev Zelo Chasir. Neither one is really gaining. There's no Hana'ah. Right? The whole issue is the Malva can't get any benefit from the Lova. But we already determined that in this case, there is no Hana'ah because no one's. The Lova is not losing money because he wasn't planning to rent out this property. And the Malva is not gaining money because he wasn't planning to rent anything. I just happened to see the spot and said, oh, nice place to sit, but it's not, you know, nice place to hang out. But I wasn't really looking to spend any money. So he's not saving money. So you might think that this case doesn't have any Hana. Ka mashmalan. But therefore, that's the chidush of Rav Yosef Bar Menuhmei. He says, if we just had our Mishnah, you might not have realized that it's a case of Zeneh Hanev Zelo Chasir. You might have thought it was a case where Zeneh Hanev Zelo Chasir. Okay? And therefore, he's coming to teach you that even in a case of Zeneh Hanev Zelo Chasir, it would work. Now, interestingly enough, there's a different girsa here. Because the conclusion of this is that what? The conclusion of this says that if the person, the Lova, was never planning to rent out this property, wasn't on the market, and the Malve wasn't planning to rent anything, then we still call that Hana'ah, even though really there's no Hana'ah. So I think it's the Rush has a different Nusach, and he says that this can't possibly be, because there really is no Hana'ah. So how could you in the end conclude, we could see the Hava Mina, you might have thought it wouldn't apply, but the conclusion that it does apply here seems very strange. So he changes one basic word, In the line that says Gavra Delo Avid Lamegar, it's that the Malva wasn't planning to rent out property. He says that's not true. It's Gavra De Avid Lamegar. Okay, he takes out the word lo, and he says it must be property that wasn't planning to be rented out. It wasn't on the market. However, it's a case where the Malva was looking to rent something. And only in that case do we eventually say, this is also a problem. But if the Malva wasn't actually looking to rent out property and he just happens to camp out there, that's okay, because that's not actually any tangible Hana. So there's a machloket about, and the real issue here is, how do we determine what Hana'ah is? That's when the Malva, remember, that's the whole issue. The Malva can't get any benefit from the Lova. So is it benefit if Zeneh Hanev Zelo Chasir? Or is it only benefit if Zeneh Hanev Zelo Chasir, right? And it's, does it have to be? He has to be getting some Hana'ah. I'm sorry, I said it wrong. I said it right. Zeneh Hanev Zelo Chasir. It is, right? How do you define Zeneh Hanev? Zeneh Hanev, does it have to be a case where he actually does get some tangible benefit that he's saving money because he was planning to rent something out and is now using this property that was abandoned? Okay, so there's a machloket about that among the Mefarshim. Okay, that was the first reading of Rav Yosef Bar Menuhmei. Now we're going to have a second reading of him. Ika d'amre, Amar Rav Yosef Bar Menuhmei, Amar Rav, Nachman. Af al pi sh'amru hadar b'chatzav chavero shelo mida'ato eino tzarich la'alot lo sachar. Even though we generally say, right, that hadar b'chatzav chavero, without his knowledge, doesn't need to give him sachar. Here's the main difference, okay? Hilveini v'dor b'chatzerai, instead of Hilvehu v'dor b'chatzero. What's the difference? Hilveini v'dor b'chatzerai is a command. It means that at the time they took the loan, they already worked this into the deal. So he says, if the guy says, lend me money and you can live in my chatzer, right? And in addition, I'll pay you back the money, ultimately, then sarich la lo sachar. Okay? But that implies that what? That if it was Somanda Amar Hilvehu, the first one said, right, it's a matter of the timeline, how it happened. According to the first case, they had the loan, right? Then over time, the Malva went to live in the Lova's property. Okay? The second case is that at the time of the loan, right, they already agreed, there was a loan with an agreement that the Malva will live in his property. Okay? So if you say that the Nusach of Rav Yosef Bar Menuhmei was Hilvehu, right? That, you know, first he loaned him the money and then later he decided that he was going to live in his property. So Manta Amar Hilvehu Kol Shekein, and that's a problem. So Kol Shekein Halveni, all the more so will it be a problem if they started from the beginning in this agreement. Clearly, right? Then it's much closer to Ribi Ktsutsa. That's the whole idea of Ribi Ktsutsa, that we set it off from the beginning. Umanda Amar Halveni, but the one who says Rav Yosef Bar Yumi said it about Halveni, what would you say? Aval Hilvehu Lo. Right? But if it's Halvehu, then it wouldn't be. My time, since they didn't make an agreement from the beginning, then nobody thinks that this is Ribi. They look at it as two totally separate transactions. One is they had a loan, and then it happened to be, he found this property, started living in it, and the beloved didn't care, and it wasn't a loss for him at all. And therefore, that's not even an issue. Okay, now we're going to see the story of Rav Yosef Bar Chama, if you remember. Rav Yosef Bar Chama, Takif Avde, he would grab Avadim, de'inshe, from people, de'masik behu zuze, that owed him money, ve'avi behu avedata. So there were all sorts of people who owed him money. He obviously was a reasonably wealthy guy who would, you know, maybe lent out money to all sorts of people. They owed him money, and he would basically take their slaves and use their slaves for his own purposes, to do malacha for him. Amar le Rava Berei, if you remember, this is the whole story, the son starts questioning the father. Okay, his son, Rava, says to him, my time avid marhachi, why are you doing this? Like how? Okay, now, right now, this doesn't seem to have to do with Ribit at all. Right now, he's saying, how could you basically, it's like you're stealing other people's avadim, you're using them for work. So Amar le, anakir Rav Nachman svirale, to Amar Rav Nachman, avda nahum krese lo shave. I have a like Rav Nachman who said that an eved is not even worth the bread you feed him, meaning that it's not any loss for the owners of the avadim because they have to feed the guy. Now I'm feeding the guy instead of them, and the work that they're doing isn't even worth the amount of the money that you have to spend on them.
It doesn't explain why he's doing it.
Right, so then what does he need it for? But maybe he's saying, well, for me, I want the work, but you're right. It's not a great answer. So anyway, his son says to him, Amar le Yimer Damer Rav Nachman, Kigon Dari Avde, Demaraki Be Kube, Avde Achrina Mi Amar. So what Rav Nachman said, that he was only talking about the specific Eved Dari who worked for him, who would dance in the wine taverns, okay? And the idea was he would dance as entertainment in order to get wine. It was a way that he would be able to get free drinks, okay? So he would work he would dance in these taverns in order to get free drinks. Basically, he was not a very productive Eved. This wasn't someone who could make a lot of money and was worth it for the owner. But Avdei Achrini Mei Amar, but he wasn't talking about regular Avadim. So Amar Lei, so what does Rav Yosef Bar Chama answer? Ana ki hadar Rav Daniel Barav Katina Amar Rav. I hold like what Rav Daniel, and the name of Rav, the son of Rav Katina, said in the name of Rav. Da Amar hatokef avdo shel chavero vasabo melacha patur de nichale de lo nistere avde. What's the issue? If the eved isn't working full time, he's going to get lazy. So I'm actually doing the guys a favor because their avadim are not working so hard. They don't have enough work to give them. So I'm taking these avadim and I'm keeping them busy so that they don't get lazy and start thinking that, oh, I don't have to work too hard. So because of that, he says it's okay because it's in the best interest of the people who I'm taking the slaves from. Amar Lei said, wait a minute though. You forgot one very important point. Hani mile hecha delo masik bezuze. But Mar kevan demasik buhu zuze mechze kiribit. Amar Rav Yosef Bar Yumi, Amar Rav Nachman, Afa Pishamru Adar b'chatzar chavero shelo midato, eino tzarich la'olo lo sachar, hilvei v'dar b'chatzero, tzarich la'olo lo sachar. He says, wait a minute, if you're trying to tell me that these avadim aren't working and you're actually doing them a favor, so it's a classic case of zeneh nevezelo chaser, right? You're getting benefit from using these workers and they're not losing anything because the workers weren't working in those hours that you took them. However, you forgot one important point. Whose avadim are you taking? People who owe you money. Well, now it's going to look like ribit because you're not allowed to get any benefit, according to Rav Yosef Bar Yumi, from somebody who owes you money. Because then it looks like you're getting, the fact that you're using their avadim is sachar for you. And what do we end with? If you remember the end of the story, Amar Lei Hadrei Bi. Okay, the father says, you're right, I'm not going to do this anymore. Okay, and here you see a story where a son you know, puts the father in his place, questions him respectfully, right? Nitzchuni banai, yafeh. It's a full circle, right, of what we started with, of Nitzchuni banai, and the father realizes that he was wrong and that this isn't something he should be doing.
The odds that he had stolen them exactly when they
right. It's a little hard to imagine that. Also, I think now looking at this story, you know, you can always see things differently when you see them in a different context. In the context of this, right, when we learned it the first time, it seemed very clear that he probably knew it was wrong, but did it anyway, and you know, till his son puts him in a corner. But now I feel like what's interesting about this whole perek that we've dealt with, and we have a little extra time, so I'll talk about one thought, is that part of what we're struggling with in this perek is, or the rabbis are struggling with, you know, and where you draw the line, right? Where is it that you're getting extra benefit? Where is it not? How does it? It's not so clear cut, right? It's very tricky, and I think here that's what you see. You know, this rabbi, Rabbi Yosef Rahama, he wasn't trying to be a bad guy. He thought that this was okay. He said, "This is maybe what he thought was it'll encourage them to pay me back." Right, and people have been asking me after class, and I want to research a little bit more about why rebate is considered so severe. I don't have a great answer yet. When we started the parak, it was all about, it's like mitah, it's like yirat Hashem, and it's much more severe than just regular dinei mamonot. When on the other hand, we see in our lives that rebate is very, it's done, it's classic business practice, and maybe Rabbi Yosef Rahama thought, this was a good business practice, right? Or the same way you take money up front. That's the way you link people in, right? It's like maintenance contracts. You link people into paying you. That's how we do business. You link into a certain price, right? You make it look good for them, but in the end, it's also good for you, right? That's the way business works. So it's very tricky to figure out where exactly to draw the line. And that's where his son, it's almost also, what's interesting about it is, Rava eventually gets at what the issue is, but it takes him a little while to get there. He senses something's not right here. He senses that somehow the father's taking advantage somehow. He's not really sure why. First he thinks it's Gezel, then he's trying to figure out what exactly is wrong about this transaction. But it's very tricky here to figure out exactly where to draw the line. What's safe business practice? And it goes back to last parak also, ona'ah. When is it okay? When is it not okay? What percentage? What situation? How do you figure it out? And it's tricky. And that's what they're trying to grapple with. You know, I was thinking it's interesting, just the fact that there's an entire perek just on rebate seems like, you know, like a lot. Or ona'ah also, there was a whole perek on it. And I think it's...
So how do they work it out today, practically speaking?
So we're going to get to Heter Iska. It's called a Heter Iska. We're going to get to it. Okay? By the end of the perek, we can ask the questions we haven't answered yet. But,
so what's perceived versus what's technically wrong in this particular case, you know, it's like more what you would think he would be doing as opposed to what's actually happening.
Meaning what?
With it, technically he's not taking rebate, but someone might think that he is.
But all the way through this chapter, nobody's actually taking rebate.
Right, well, that's what we're saying, exactly. A lot of this is perceived. It reminds me, by the way, I wanted to say, there was one, I have to remember where it came up. Hadar, this case of Hadar b'chatzar chavero, if you're a malve and you live in his, one of the mafreshim says it's only, and it's exactly what you said, Esti, it's only if it's public property and publicly known. If he's getting private benefit from him, that's not a problem at all. And that all of this is public, and I think it might also highlight that story. This is Rabbi Yosef Rahama. He was a big, right, his son was Rava. This is, I think Rava was a little concerned, this doesn't look good. There's something that doesn't look right about it to other people. And that there's also, thank you for bringing that up, there's this issue of public versus private, and the way it looks, the way it appears, even if it's not actually interest, right? This isn't interest, but it looks like you're getting some benefit.
So
which again, right, so
division, I... division shouldn't be public versus private, because you can see a lot of private people, you can still see what they're doing, and if they're the kind of person, if you see that they're taking advantage or getting benefit...
No, it means private, that we had a private interaction that nobody knew about. Okay, if you have some private property and I do something, you know, somehow use it in a way that nobody else will see, then it's not an issue.
No.
Which again leads us to this whole question of what rebate is all about and what's the issue. Here there's a lot of this avak rebate, this rebate to Rabbanan, is very much so that it appears to be rebate. And why is the appearance of it so critical? Why is that important, right? There's certain things where we think appearance is important and certain things where we're not really concerned about what it appears like. We're more worried about, is it or is it not? So why is this such an issue that the issue is people will think it's Rebbe? Why that's so bad? So we have to think about that. I'm hoping maybe by the end of the paragraph I'll have some ideas. I'll also try to do some research otherwise into why I was thinking. Start looking at that pasuk in Yechezkel that talks about that, you know, if you do Rebbe, you're deserving of death. Like, why it treats it so severely, you know, and what the perception is. Anyway, we'll have to keep thinking about it. But that's definitely a theme that's coming up, both the severity of it and the appearance aspect of it.
I wonder whether we're looking at it with our modern day eyes, and maybe Rebbe doesn't mean it the way we instinctively understand it, and it's much more a question of an issue of taking advantage. That if somebody's borrowing money, as you said yesterday, if somebody's borrowing money, he's in need of money. And really the whole point is this looking out for poor people and not taking advantage and being more, you know.
Right, so that was something we brought up, and we have to think about whether that's the only issue. But yeah, we brought it up. I'm not sure if it was during class or after class, but that the rebate is really a way of protecting the poor, because the people who are taking loans, as Ruth said, are the poor people,
and therefore the
issue of what it looks like. Right. What you notice here, though, the lova obviously has property. It's not like he's a landowner, so he's not actually so poor if he's got land. And not only that, he's not even renting out his land. You have to wonder. Maybe he should have been smart and rented out his land. But yes, you could. One way of perceiving it is looking through the lens of this is really, it fits in with the Shemitah Kesafim, canceling loans, which is very hard for us to understand in a modern day world. The whole point of lending money is to get your money back. Who's going to lend money if you're, you know, and obviously not only modern day world, they struggled with it until it was Mitake Prisbal so that people could actually get their money back. Otherwise, nobody wanted to lend money. But it's part of the social way of taking care of the poor. And it goes in with, we have to take care of the poor Jewish people. You also have to wonder, if that's the case, why are we allowed to charge interest from non-Jews? Because we do have laws of tzedakah that relate to, I mean, I wonder, from the Torah, do we have to give tzedakah to non-Jews? I mean, I know there's ani erecha kod mim ani erecheret, and take care of your own first, but I think there's a general idea of helping people in need, or maybe, I don't know, maybe it just applies to Jews. That's a good question. I don't remember. So anyway, that's part of the equation. It might be the whole thing, it might not. We have to think about it. Okay. And maybe that's why it's considered as if you killed someone, because some people, right, what do we say? It causes strife in the house if there's no money, and the money eventually can cause people's downfall. They don't have enough food, they can't eat, they can't. Maybe it's as if you're killing somebody.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If there's money in the house, you can't help it.
What?
Money in the house also causes
strife. Ah, that's also true. Yeah. But you can see how at least money could potentially cause someone's, you know, death or fall apart.